Ready on the right, ready on the left? All right. Call the House Rules Committee together. We're just a little after 2 o'clock on this is the 21st day of July. If you had asked me years ago if I'd ever see Gavlin in the committee in July, I would have laughed. Well, I'm still laughing. We have House Bill 3001 before us today. This is the Inducement Act, we don't have it before us yet because I have a subcommittee that was made up of Speaker of the House, and the Majority Leader, and the Minority Leader, and we had quite a discussion these last 40 days. So, Representative Harris, why don't you go ahead and give us your opening comments on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. House Bill 3001, as you remember correctly, was given to the subcommittee made up of the three members you indicated, and we met all over the state, some more than others, but I think people of the state of Alaska and certainly in certain areas were afforded the opportunity to give their ideas, concepts, and thoughts on this piece of legislation, and a number of them did. We did it in an open and transparent and wide open environment, and lots of ideas were brought forward. Lots of people had various different topics to talk about, some included in the legislation, some not, but that's okay. We also held the meetings in conjunction with the members of the other body, which gave hopefully the same information to them that gave to us. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I am prepared to submit the subcommittee report back to the full Rules Committee and back to the jurisdiction of you as chairman over the committee.
Thank you. We had a couple other members on there. Thanks to the Majority Leader and the Chairman of Budget and Audit for paying for a lot of it and supplying a lot of the expertise. Why don't I go ahead and let you and the Minority Leader go ahead and give your thoughts on it, and then I will go into general instructions on the committee.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the biggest thanks that we owe is all the folks from TransCanada who spent their time probably answering the same question over and over again, as frustrating as it was. I think at the end of the day, the members of the Alaska Legislature now understand this issue and the true choices that are out there. And probably the people that were hard over no are probably a little more wishy-washy on it. People that were hard over yes are a little more wishy-washy on the vote that will take place here in the next week or so. And I think the more you learn about the issue, the more you realize the fundamental choices that are being made regarding leverage and commercial activities and these types of things. So I think that the roadshow and the time that was taken, whether we could not have done it in Juneau. You can't have the same hearing over and over again in Juneau without the frustration level rising. So I think it was an excellent opportunity, not only for the state to see us in action, which in the last year the legislature has taken quite a beating, deservedly so, with some of our members' activities. But it gave the public a chance to go forward and see legislative debate, honest debate, differences of opinion, a lot of facts and figures out there, but mostly on all sides of the issue, a whole educational level. And for me, who's daily for 5 years, I feel like, been trying to learn about this issue, it is heartening to see everybody else get more educated right now. So I think that the process has worked very well up till now, and I think it will probably continue to do so. Whether you like the bill or don't like the bill, the process has educated the members tremendously, and I think that is a good thing for all of us.
Thank you, Representative Samuels, and I appreciate that and your work. And so, Representative Curtula.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of the minority, I want to thank you for the opportunity to get access to so many people, so many experts I want to thank the administration for sticking in there, having people available to us at almost any point to be able to ask questions of and get good answers to. And I want to thank the public for hanging in there, for so many people coming out to the public meetings, and to all of the people who welcomed us sometimes literally right into their homes when we needed extra beds and places. And I'm ready to get on with the show. Thank you.
Thank you. And for me, I sat through every one of the meetings, and first, I got to say, at the beginning, I was a little skeptical of going out on a roadshow. And my skepticism centered on the fact that I thought that we as legislators might end up talking too much in the form of beating our chest and not enough for digging for information. And I was exactly wrong. It was one of the best meetings that we could have done. And so I'll eat my share of humble pie on that one. The communities were excellent. Every place we went, the community members felt honored and privileged to be a part of the discussion, both at the community election level, those local officials, and many people who had actually some opposition to this. They have another pipeline in mind, and yet they all felt, I think, respected that they were listened to. So thank you to the members of the subcommittee for putting that together, and a special thanks to Representative Samuels. One of my intentions in this particular committee is for us as a committee to have the discussion. I have not invited anybody for public testimony. I figured we've probably heard enough of that. I know we have some amendments here, and there will be some discussion on the capacity to amend this bill. In the legislature, when a bill is before you, it's my point of view that it's always open for amendment. It's just that what are the consequences, and so we'll go down the road of having that discussion. And the bill itself is very simple. It just says approval, issuance of a license under the Alaska Gasoline Inducement Act. It says the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of Natural Resources are authorized to issue a license under the AS 4390 statute to TransCanada Alaska LLC and Foothills Pipeline Limited jointly as a leasee. And it says the act takes effect immediately under 01-10-070C. And I'm sure we will have that debate. I let the subcommittee members talk as opening statements, and we'll all have closing statements, but are there other members that would like to chime in at the beginning? I think we'll probably have our discussion. the floor is scheduled at 4 o'clock, but don't let that hinder you from discussion. I think they're waiting for us to send them a finished product, and so if we can't finish it by 4, Mr. Speaker, my guess is we'll probably just keep going until we finish. And so
4 o'clock house time, how's that?
Right. I just didn't want you to feel that you were going to be throttled back. I did bring some information.
Like that's happened before, huh?
But the only time that I might try to throttle you back, Mr. Speaker, in this particular committee is just on the appropriateness of language, because you've actually cursed in my committee before.
Not as bad as I cursed at that guy on the street there I was in the other day.
We do have some amendments, and so that brings before us from the subcommittee the A version of House Bill 3001. And do I hear a motion to pass it out of committee?
Object.
Okay, well.
Better be careful. I think I failed, John.
That is true. The people who count votes in this world could see that this could struggle, and you're looking at the amendments. And so I think we have several amendments here, and what I'll do is I'll just we'll take them. They're A dot numbers, so there's A.2, A.5, 6, and 7. And how about we'll just put them in your stack in that order. Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, the only one that I've received in advance of sitting down at the table today is A2, and so I have comments on those, but I was wondering if we could have that discussion about whether we can amend or not, because I have specific questions regarding that. I just listened to a press release that was talking about people trying to derail the process and the hard work that this body and all legislators have done during this process. So is it appropriate to have that discussion before we actually take amendments so that people have a greater comfort in our ability from a legal perspective to amend?
I think Representative Samuels said he had something on that. So
sure.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I don't grow enough hair to fill in.
Mr. Chairman, I got a legal memo from January, and I have to cut to the chase. In conclusion, the legislative consideration of the issuance of a license under a G is limited to the approval and disapproval of the license. However, the legislature also has the power to amend a GIA if it finds the existing law does not result in the project that the legislature finds is in the best interest of the state. And that pretty much sums it up. On a philosophical level, with all due respect to the administration, they've put a lot of work into this. We're a separate and equal branch of government. They don't like any of these amendments. They can come forward and testify to that or not testify. TransCanada's not going to like any of the amendments. But we are a separate branch of government, and it is our duty. We do not work for the executive branch, period. Thank you.
Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, those listening at home, those in the audience today, the memo that Representative Samuels is referring to is dated January 23, 2008. The subject is a work order number 25-LS1375, and he's referring to page 2 of the document in a conclusion remark. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And it is true that this is amendable. I would stand by the separation of powers all day long. The consequence of that, though, are significant. And I think you would all agree with me that both the party being named in this particular bill would give some concern to them. Certainly, the whole licensing issue would come up for question. So it could be a way of saying no to the bill. And I would encourage members that in the amendment process, if you see that it's a vote no to the license, just say that straight up. And then we'll go on from there. So I'll go to Representative Kurtula and then Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we going to have Mr. Bullock come over? I mean, if we're going to center around, is he here?
He's right behind you.
Okay. He's not here.
So he says.
Well, I guess I'll give my point of view on this, and as long as he's here, then we have him to ask questions of. But in my opinion, that's exactly what an amendment does, is it kills the whole process, and we wind up right back at square one. And we're in a unique position. I mean, we essentially have a contract before us, and if we start to change things, pull that thread, the contract falls apart, and we're back at square one without anything in front of us. So from my point of view, what we'll do if we do pass an amendment and if it goes all the way and passes on the floor is we've, in essence, killed the whole deal.
And I haven't seen all the amendments, so I don't know that to be a fact, but I'm willing to entertain them to discern that. And so as we drill down into these, I will have to make up our mind on that. If we get to the place where we have to have a legal opinion before us, knowing full well that they're quite often much like consultants, you can have dueling legal opinions. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I was reluctant to invite a whole bunch of testimony before the committee at the outset, because I think at the end of the day it's really our decision as to whether we'll amend this bill or not. But the consequence does need to be known, and I think the practical effect of a significant change in the requirements of this license is really a no vote. So, Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I've brought this up to several committee members, Representative Johnson and Representative Samuels. I was wondering if the legal department could speak to somehow empowering the legislative bodies to approve the change in AGIA through our vote of a yes vote, and the administration actually concurring with those changes by the governor actually signing the AGIA license, and the third way, being able to cascade down so that you've gotten all parties to the table at the end, and TransCanada then in the form of accepting any portion of the $500 million would agree to those same terms. And I don't know, because I haven't had time to review any of these well, one of the amendments, that there is that cascading effect that would set a precedence for approval of any kind of changes that were there.
One of the things, Representative Faircloth, that I think we'll run into is the expectation, both at the application and the awarding process, of a change in the requirements or the expectations begins to diminish the party's willingness to probably honor this. And so, and that's probably going to be part of the discussion as we go down through this. So my suggestion is let's go ahead and talk about the policy debates, and then when we get to that, if we get to a point where at one particular vote that question is the salient question, then I think we can probably get the dueling legal opinions, because I'm sure that's what we're going to look at. And then I guess on our part is at the best legal advice we can get, it's still going to be a policy call that falls on our shoulders. And so I'd rather start with the policy call. Representative Samuels, you probably looked into this more than I have. How do you view that as
well,
a procedure?
I think that sounds right, and I will speak to my three amendments. One it's on its way, and quite frankly, they don't. One of them touches on actions of the state, not of TransCanada. One of them is talking about indemnification for the $16 billion, and if, quite frankly, if we don't get indemnified and TransCanada walks away, that's, to me, is in the best interest of the state to indemnify us. So it becomes purely a policy call. They're not reaching in and making substantive changes to must-haves or things that were in the RFP or things that were in the TransCanada proposal other than indemnification. We had no way, on that particular amendment, I'll speak to it when the time comes, we had no way of addressing that before we knew that TransCanada was licensee. We had no way to do that. So if we don't do it now, then shame on us, or at least have the discussion now. And to say that you can't do something like this when I feel it's in the best interest of the state, when I could not have done it before, it flies in the face of common sense on that particular amendment.
Okay. And, I think Reneva has the other amendments. Is that true?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. So we'll continue with the discussion. Did you have something?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, without having the motion, the amendments before us, and actually,
right.
If you want to start with them. Otherwise, I mean, I think we'll just keep going back and forth here because I think exactly the opposite. So.
Sure. Just for the general discussion, I wanted to at least have that opening discussion, and knowing that pretty much is not only going to end on our shoulders, but on the 40 members of the House to make that decision. So with that, what we have is the A.2 Bullock Amendment, and I see Representative Johnson's name is on it. So Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Amendment Number 1 and move on to Number 2.
Well, I'll object so that you can explain it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we went around the state, and as I go door to door in my district, the one thing that I've heard is we need gas for Alaskans. I am not certain that under the GEA license that is clearly spelled out. I think it handcuffs us with the treble damages on the $500 million. And what Amendment Number 1 does, and it is not simple, and it may go to the root of the bill as we discussed, it may be a substantive change. But I think the people of Alaska, it is, in fact, how many times did we hear it's our gas? In your home city, Mr. Chairman, we had a rally where that was a cry that was vocalized by 600-700 people. I think everywhere we've gone, we have heard that gas for Alaskans is the top issue in front of people. Who does what, where, when after that kind of takes a back seat. So what this bill does is any pipeline project wholly within the state, for market in the state, or for export from the state by marine transportation. So it allows for the All Alaska Line, as it's been learned to be called, or a bullet line, or any number of other options that we've heard. I guess this would even allow for the line from Cook Inlet North to exceed the half a BCF a day and give the state the gas it needs not only today but tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that. And with that, I would ask for you to vote for this amendment to answer the call of all the people that we heard all around the state. We want our gas. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And I will go ahead and respond from my perspective. I think natural gas pipeline coming from the north into the interior and in, along the rail belt is absolutely important. But the question was raised during our discussion as to whether beyond a half a BCF, it was a competing line. And under this license, it does go to the heart of the license, in my view, and that is we will agree to license with TransCanada with these kind of protections that we don't support a competing pipeline, but that we still could have an in-state use. I was convinced that the half a BCF was enough for Alaskans' use in the interior. Probably the only place where I probably shake a little bit on that is the use for the refinery that sits right in the middle of my district. And I would like to be able to have gas for them to go ahead and produce rather than having to use oil to produce. And I think it would be a little less expensive. But we have for export from the state, and the expectation of in-state use, I could agree with. For export use, though, I think we do get into competition, although I understand, I think we had this discussion a couple of times. So because I think it would tilt the license, I'm going to object to it, but I'm open to further discussion.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, thank you. I was hoping that that might be an amendment to take export out, and at least we could get gas for in-state Alaskans. I didn't see that come in the form of an amendment, so I'll continue to talk about it. I think that maybe the half a B is enough, but the bill says designed to carry. That means if it starts at 4 and it's designed, we could be subjecting ourselves to treble damages. I think this takes that completely off the table. This gets gas for Alaskans, and if although I would not be happy with you removing for export from the state, I would certainly entertain that as a somewhat less than friendly amendment, but not an enemy amendment. The other thing I have to say, Mr. Chairman, is I think every member of the legislature has the right to vote on this. I think for us as a committee to take that out of the hands of the full body would be inappropriate. I think that we should advance this in recognition that in the next few days, every member of the body will be able to stand up and make an amendment to take it back the way it was. But I believe that this is an opportunity for me and others to stand up for our constituents and ask for our gas. And so I would encourage everyone to vote yes on this.
And generally speaking, I would agree with you as far as the body getting to hear all of this, except for the public testimony for now well into a half year has been for the half of BCF. And I think to change it would be disingenuous to those who are making the application, the TransCanada group. I think it would also set up a wrong expectation that we are not going to ask for offtake points off of the main line. So there's a range of things that I think we could find ourselves going into. And so I'm going to maintain my objection. Anybody else? Representative Harris.
Yeah, a couple of questions here. First, I'll ask it of the maker of the amendment, and then I may ask some others to come forward. Are you allowing any kind of testimony if we ask a question? Not testimony, but if we ask a question, can they answer something from the audience or not?
If you want to bring somebody before us to ask a question to get it to a specific point, with the indulgence of the committee, I'll allow that. But just be aware that I didn't want to kick the door open to go around what we've been doing for the last 40 days. That's
okay. Then my question is, in this amendment, what it does is it says that, first of all, if we grant the license to TransCanada, a project that is built within the state that's not only for state use but for an export market, I've only heard of one at this point in time that's proposed, but if that project were then to try to go forward, then TransCanada would not be eligible for treble damages. Is that the intent of the amendment?
That is the intent of the amendment, yes, sir.
Okay.
Only in those instances, in-state gas and marine transportation.
I just want a clarification. Can I ask Tony Palmer to come up real quick, just because I want to ask him one question, point it on the record, make sure that it's
make sure that it's clear here.
All right. Mr. Palmer, are you willing to come up?
That's the appropriate way to state that, too, I think. Are you willing to come up?
A refusal could be a recusal.
Yeah.
This is not going to be a hard question. It's just one we talked about earlier.
Good afternoon.
You state your record, your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Tony Palmer, Vice President of Alaska Development for TransCanada.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the indulgence. Just quickly, just for the record, Mr. Palmer and I had a nice conversation this morning, and I think it was this morning, maybe it was this afternoon, but I think it was this morning. And one of the questions that I asked him was this. If you are granted a license by the state of Alaska, is it your intent, or your company's intent, that if an LNG project comes forward, and in the open season, which you've said publicly in all these different testimonies that that was the case, but in the open season that you would go to, that if, say, the Port Authority or somebody else came forward with a project with capacity for an LNG pipeline to Valdez, for instance, that you would, if it met the terms of a G and all that sort of stuff, you would gladly facilitate getting that gas to market?
Mr. Speaker, through the chair, just repeat what I think I've said a number of times on the record is at the initial open season, we will have provide opportunities to customers along the route of the pipeline all the way to Alberta or to Valdez to nominate gas simultaneously to those locations. Each customer will have to meet exactly the same terms and conditions to Valdez as they would have to Fairbanks or to Tok or to Alberta. So yes, they will have the opportunity if they come forward with the same conditions that any other customer would have, that we would construct a pipeline to Valdez or to Alberta or both simultaneously if we get sufficient gas to both places.
Okay, thank you. That's it. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Mr. Palmer.
Just lightly.
Yeah, thank you for being here. It's my understanding from all the discussions that we had over the that if a pipeline over half a B came out of Cook Inlet or came out of the Nanana Basin or came out of Glen Allen, that wouldn't be eligible or you wouldn't consider that in competition with your line for in-state use. Is that correct?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, I don't have the statute in front of me, but as I recall, the competitive nature goes to gas from the North Slope, which is, as I recall, is north of 68 degrees, but I don't have that in front of me. So clearly gas from the Cook Inlet is south of that 68 degrees. The 500 million a day limit refers to gas coming from the North Slope, not to gas south of there.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tony, I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate our conversation as well. If in this amendment we were to take out export from the state by marine transportation, would that be more palatable to you, even if it may have our in-state use ends up being over a half a BCF? Would that be something that would make this more palatable to you? It's not something I want to do, but I certainly want gas for Alaskans.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I haven't seen the specific amendment, but clearly any time that you are changing to a volume that's north of 500 million a day, you are affecting the available gas for the pipeline that we hope to construct if you give us the license, and that is we evaluated this based on an expectation that in-state use is less than 500 million a day. Clearly, all the studies that we have seen would indicate that it is less today, and it's expected to be less for many, many years. In the event that you open it up to exports, well, you've opened it up to an unlimited volume, clearly. The world market is very large, and that makes it much more challenging. If you leave it at in-state gas and you still exceed 500 million a day, you may also be affecting the value that we think we achieved by making our application, which is that a competitive pipeline seeking North Slope gas would not be pulling away more than a half a BCF a day from our prospective project.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. The issue to me is changing the criteria after we have accepted the application and given public testimony as to the 5 BCF. And I still maintain that the 5 offtake points would serve us in the event of getting this pipeline. So the license to me is valuable in that regard. So, yes, Representative Johnson.
In closing, unless someone else says, and I don't disagree with you, but I think the timing of the 5 offtake points and the timing of a possible bullet line to my district, I think the time gap there would be considerable. I don't think people in Fairbanks, your district, or in my district are inclined to wait the 5, 7, 10, 15 years that we will be waiting for that gas. We've heard testimony that this will come much quicker, and I still would like to advance this to the full body, recognizing that it may not have a very good chance there for the same arguments that you have, but I think every member of this body has a right to be on the record as to where they stand on in-state use of gas. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, the record, directly reflect, 500 BCF for in-state use is significant. And I think it's adequate for all personal home heating and uses for electrical. Whether or not the refinery would be able to maintain, I have been convinced that it will, especially with Agrium not ramping up. But even with Agrium ramping up, I think it would still be sufficient. So, and then the economics of the 5 offtake points, to me, in balance, are enough for me to vote against this. But don't put words in my mouth that I am against in-state gas use, please.
Mr. Chairman, I would never would never try to put words. I would just
I
like
to answer
give you
a constituency.
I would like to give you an option to vote on this on the floor, sir.
All right. That was closing comments. For everybody who wants to talk now, he gets another shot at it. So
I'm done.
the person who makes the amendment gets the last say. So
call for the question.
Representative Faircloth had a point.
Sir, it's not a point, but should it be successful, there's something more palatable. So I'd like to move to strike on line 3, continuing on 4 or for export from the state by marine transportation, and again on line 16 or for the export from the state by marine transportation. That's on the first part of line 7.
Would you go over that one more time, Representative Faircloth?
Yes.
On line 3?
On 3, after the word "to a market in the state," delete the remaining
okay
words.
And then on line 16?
After the word "market in the state," delete "or for export from the state by marine transportation."
I'll object.
There is an objection to the amendment. You want to speak to it or just vote?
Just vote. Pretty obvious why I object.
Mm-hmm. Any discussion on the amendment to the amendment? All right. Let's call for the question then.
The amendment to the amendment.
No.
Susie?
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Samuels?
No.
Representative Curtula?
No.
Representative Gutenberg?
No.
Representative Harris?
No.
Representative Fairclough?
Yes.
Representative Coghill?
Yes.
2 yes, 5 no on the amendment to Amendment 1.
That brings the amendment before us for the discussion. Call for the question.
On Amendment 1.
Amendment 1.
Representative Samuels?
Yes.
Representative Curtula?
No.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Fairclough?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Coghill?
No.
3 yes, 4 no.
That'll bring us to amendment number A.5, which would be amendment number 2.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 2.
Okay, good. I don't have to explain my objection. Objection by Representative Guttenberg.
Amendment number 2, what amendment number 2 attempts to do is there are certain places in the state that have right-of-ways that would be called pinch points, and Adigan Pass and the Yukon River would be pinch points. And what this does is that prohibits the commissioner from issuing the right-of-way without the FERC or the RCA certificate being issued. The point of a GIA, when at its real crux, is to give TransCanada leverage to move forward with the pipeline so that you can get all of the must-haves and the expansion possibilities that have been discussed ad nauseum here. I think that if you give them the right-of-way where there can be no competing right-of-way, you give them too much leverage. So I think that issue needs to be set aside, and the process can continue, open seasons, everything else continues. This doesn't change anything that was in the AGIA bill. It doesn't change anything that was in the TransCanada application. What it stops is either this commissioner, potentially the next commissioner, it could be the next administration, from issuing the right-of-way, which will give leverage to a party. It could be leverage given to a producer on pipeline. The next governor could come in and issue the right-of-way. And what this says is slow down on the issuance of the right-of-ways until we get further down the road.
It's a new discussion to me, so I'm going to ask a couple of questions.
Sure.
If I can think fast enough. The expectation in AGIA is that we'll have a special pipeline coordinator. And so there is an advantage that gives the licensee the probably a special place of operating within these permits. And it's been told us by the department that should somebody apply for permits and right-of-ways, that they would also kind of rent their own workers. And so at this particular point, you'd be saying a right-of-way could not be granted unless they have a public the certificate of public convenience.
Correct.
And so help me understand in the process of this that the certificate of public convenience falls way into the kind of the procedural makeup of getting to a pipeline. Can you help me understand about where that would fall in the timeline?
The timing, Mr. Chairman, if I could, the timing on the amendment, quite frankly, may not be the best time. We maybe wait too long by the time you get to the certificate, because either TransCanada or Denali or Port Authority, whoever, is going to need probably more information. But the fear is we issue the license, and then this governor or perhaps the next governor, they pick a winner in the marketplace at these points where you can only have the one right-of-way, and that's going to be problematic. And this legislature will cede its power over any of this, and you give leverage to a party. A governor is going to pick a party for some of the problems in Adigan Pass. And Mr. Porter and I discussed the concept of the amendment, and quite frankly, we didn't get enough chance to try to probably fine-tune my concerns, mm-hmm. mostly on the two pinch points. But I wanted to make sure that the concept got out there.
Right.
You do not want somebody giving the point of this is we give TransCanada a bunch of leverage here. That's the kind of the point of the whole exercise here. TransCanada gets the leverage. If the governor turns around, or a governor turns around and gives them more leverage, or quite frankly, what if they gave it to Denali? Another governor comes in 2011, issues a right-of-way. Perhaps the right-of-way is issued to TransCanada the day after we issue the license, and the leverage picture changes, which is not something that the legislature intended when it passed AGIA or if it issued the license under here. This is a separate leverage point on those two particular places on the right-of-ways in the state. So with that, I can, with the concept out, I can work with Mr. Porter. I can work with Steve and try to come up with some language that addresses my concerns on those two particular points better than this language here. But I wanted to get the concept and the concern out before the committee. And this isn't, I know with me saying it, it's probably not going to sell very well, but it's not attempting to pick a side. It's attempting to not further government picking winners and losers in the marketplace further than we're already doing. And that was the point of amendment number two.
And I appreciate that. But my question falls into the area of, by the time you have got to the certificate of public convenience by FERC,
you need the right-of-way by the time you get there.
So I'm going to maintain an objection on that, but Do you want to try to get something to the floor? Do you want to...
I'd like to hear what everybody else has to say on the concept.
I wanted to dominate this. Representative Cartula.
I'll let you dominate if you'd like. It didn't come out sounding right. Okay, let's back up. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the Department of Natural Resources already has a process that they deal when you have duplicates on right-of-way leases, and that would be, you know, they would have to take into consideration. I mean, I'm looking at the statute, and it, you know, seems to say that, and I'm almost positive the regulations also deal with multiple applications. So I think there's already a way to deal with it, but I'm happy to work with Representative Samuels to take a look at that. Not that I'm going to support an amendment, because I won't, but I do think that that's a good point, and it's something that the commissioner should be careful about. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, maybe I can
Representative Harris.
Try to understand this a little bit better. Throughout the scenario, we grant the license to TransCanada without this amendment, and the Denali group decides that not only that they're going to go forward, and but that they do go forward, and they go to open season as well, and they get their open season approved, and we all know they have the gas, and they don't ask for any fiscal certainty on the slope, so that there's no provisions here that are applying against the TransCanada deal. And they say to the state, you know, hey, we'll just pay whatever the going rate is, and we'll pay it for, you know, continue, and we'll worry about what the legislature does to us and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, we want to keep going. Is there anything, does this amendment basically say that the administration, the commissioner, cannot deny a right-of-way to them because of a GIA? Or am I reading this wrong?
Through the chair, Mr. Speaker, there are only a couple of points that are of a concern to me. I mean, if you have a right-of-way, you can issue dueling right-of-ways and dueling permits, and there's a procedure set out that the DNR and the DOR can do. There are a couple of points where you're going to pick one. And if the administration picks one in order to leverage their favorite child to give them more leverage on there, then that becomes problematic to me. I don't think you want to use the permitting process to provide more leverage than we're already getting with the entire AGIA bill. And that's and you could flip it on its head with something in 2011 with a different governor and a different administration issuing it the other way to try to kill TransCanada. By issuing this Adigan pad, the permits in there, you can use permits and taxes to try to manipulate the process. And this was an attempt, and I will withdraw the amendment. But you don't want that to happen further than we've already fully discussed in the legislative process. And this has nothing to do with the TransCanada application whatsoever or AGIA whatsoever. It is changing procedurally what the commissioners may or may not do when it comes to permitting. So as far as an amendment on the bill, and once again, I'm sure the administration doesn't like it and TransCanada doesn't like it, but it by no means affects the economics of the project or the project that was put forward by TransCanada. It is... That's an apples and oranges argument as far as I'm not going to support any amendment. This amendment doesn't go to a GIA or the TransCanada application. This goes to the procedures that will be followed for permitting a project, any project, to make sure that more leverage isn't introduced that the legislature did not discuss fully.
Is he withdrawing the amendment now?
Do you want
to refer to the discussion?
We must have further discussion. He has not withdrawn it yet. So.
You did withdraw.
Not yet.
Representative Guttenberg.
Just quickly then on that point.
Representative Cartula.
If it doesn't go towards any of the things, and I believe you that it doesn't, then why would we want to jeopardize the whole thing, and why don't we sit down with the commissioner and work this out through the regulatory process? I mean, the pinch point is a good point, but I, having worked at the Joint Pipeline Office, having written pipeline right-of-ways, I feel like there's got to be an obvious answer, and it can be taken care of in a different manner rather than turning in the whole deal at this point over this issue. Thank you.
Okay. And with that, I'll withdraw amendment number two.
Thank you for the discussion. It brings up a good point.
We'll come up again.
Yes, and the timeline is the thing for information purposes that I'll be watching. Okay, well, that brings us to a number six amendment, and this has Representative Johnson's name on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move amendment three. Excellent.
I will object so that we can hear this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we went around the state, we heard a lot of different things, but the one thing I learned for certain is regardless of what position you take, you can find an expert to back you up. We started out with the understanding that Point Thompson was critical, absolutely critical to us getting a gas and having gas for an open season. What Amendment Number 3 does is it will prohibit the reimbursement of the $500 million until the Point Thompson issue is solved. And it doesn't make any clarification as to how it's solved. They can absolutely take it back. The administration can grant a license. They can take it back. They can go to court. But I think that this amendment strengthens what we have, because without it, I don't think we get a gas pipeline regardless who builds it. We heard some economics that said we could. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. I'm not an economist. It was a little over my head. But I go back to what we were told time and time again. Without Point Thompson, there will be no gas line. This just puts pressure, and maybe a lot of pressure, on the administration to solve the Point Thompson issue one way or the other prior to and quite expeditiously. This will light a fire, and I think that's what needs to happen. I think that's what TransCanada needs. I think that's what the state needs, and I think that's what we need to get to a successful open season. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Who was the one that objected? Was I the one that?
I did.
Representative Guttenberg, you want to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, there was a comment made in the previous amendment that was withdrawn that I think just flows right into this one, and that is slowing down the project, going too fast. You know, the Point Thompson one is, you know, from my perspective, is the state exercising its sovereignty. I don't know why we want to penalize TransCanada for what the state is doing on its own behalf. And again, I think the one of the overall situations here on overriding things is changing the nature of the contract that we have with TransCanada, not only for TransCanada, but for also all those others that either bid and didn't succeed, or those that didn't even bother bidding. I mean, I think we'll get to that later on, but we expect TransCanada to go forward as soon as they receive the license, if they do receive the license. And, you know, on that other side, while they're doing that work that we expect them to do with due diligence on a timeline that shows that they are doing what they need to be doing to get this to open season, now we're saying, well, because the state's doing its job, we're going to penalize you and not going to reimburse you until something that the state is exercising on its own behalf is done. I think that's inherently unfair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the purpose of this is not to in any way penalize TransCanada. I, too, had a very good conversation with the representative of TransCanada, and I think they are a stellar company, and I'm very comfortable with them. What I think this does is it enhances the state's chance of getting a pipeline. I think that if we are expeditious and we could have anywhere from 6 to 18 months, and when the reimbursements come about is yet to be determined. How they're about to, I don't think there's even a monthly or quarterly or an annual billing. I don't know how that's going to transfer. That's going to be in the regulations. But I don't believe we get a pipeline that's going to do what the state of Alaska and the citizens that we've heard testify around the state time and time again, and the vast amount of money that we're supposedly going to be making, unless we make available all the gas that the state has to this project. This will absolutely expedite that process, and it will bring to bear, granted, a certain pressure on the administration to get it solved. And once again, I want to state that I don't care how it's resolved. Take the leases back, grant it to another party, do whatever you will. But that gas has to be available for this pipeline before it can be successful. And I'm sure I can find an expert to back me up on that if I just had the time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I too agree that the Point Thompson unit is it's the center of making a pipeline viable as far as the economics. I may not agree with you on how we get there. We have given some authority to the commissioners, and at this point, because it is under litigation, I think stepping in the middle of it is awkward. So, any further discussion? Representative Cotullo?
Well, you just made the point that would concern me about this. We need to care about how we deal with this. I mean, we don't want to just usurp the court. We don't want to usurp the commissioner. I mean, I kind of give a lot of credit to the commissioner for coming forward and saying, hey, you know, it's not there right at the moment. I mean, I think that's the way the system is supposed to work. So I think to put this into it would be really an artificial way of doing it, and I have real concern about doing it that way, just structurally. Aside from how I may feel about what's happened with Exxon at Point Thompson, I just don't think this is the right way to do it. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I read over the amendment again, there is no direction as to how it is solved. There is no direction whether it's legal, whether it's administrative. It is just a statement that says we have to have Point Thompson to make for a viable project. I can see us getting to an open season, and what if the producers came with everything they had, and it's not enough for the banks? It doesn't make any difference who's building the pipeline or anything else. Without the gas, it is my belief, without the gas from Point Thompson, when they go to the financial institutions in an open season, TransCanada is going to have a very rough time without the gas that's available in that field.
Mind if I just have a discussion with you on that, Representative? We are going to prohibit reimbursement, and so practically speaking, we tie the hands of going to an open season or getting the financial interest determinations or the things that FERC needs to make that decision. Kind of pulls the incentives right out of the bill.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I recognize that, and I'd be happy, I'd be delighted if the knowledge base of this committee could come up with a better way. What I know is on one end, what I believe I know, I'll qualify that because I've realized I don't know a lot. What I believe on one end is that we have to have the gas. And to get there, this is the way that I came up with. I don't believe we can advance a pipeline without it. I think this lights a fire under the administration. I think it would result in a much better deal for the state and everyone else if the gas were available. Once again, the hows I don't care, and I do understand the drawbacks. But I think it's time that we advanced a project. If we're going to pass this license and we're going to advance it, I don't want to ever have it be said that it was set up for failure because the gas wasn't available for TransCanada to do. I probably can't support the concept because there's a lot of other problems that I have with it. But I don't want it to be said is that the state prevented TransCanada from being successful because the gas was simply not available for some reason. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Comments? Representative Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, I feel obligated to say some of what we've heard from our own presenters as well as from the administration on the economics. And it hasn't been proven to me, and I totally concur with Representative Johnson, that I don't think that we have a gas pipeline if we don't have Point Thompson. But I'm not comfortable withholding expenses that qualify under the comments. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but or if this is the way. But I totally want Alaskans to know that if we don't have Point Thompson, this legislator doesn't think that we have a project either. I just don't know that this gets us where we want to go and still holds us harmless enough in changing AGEA. I do believe we have the right to change AGEA, but it is a substantive change if we don't allow those cost reimbursements. Thank you.
Any other comments? Question?
Question.
Susie, let's take a vote. Question is on amendment number 3.
Representative Cotullo?
No.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Representative Harris?
No.
Representative Fekla?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Samuels?
Yes.
Representative Coghill?
No.
2 yes, 5 no.
So, amendment number 3 fails. That brings A.7, which will be amendment number 4. Representative Samuels.
Chairman, I move amendment number 4.
I'll object so that we can hear it.
What amendment number 4 does, Mr. Chairman, is we've had at-length discussions on the withdrawn partners or the potential liability of the withdrawn partners. Legal counsel for both the administration as well as the state has said that you would never be allowed to roll that into the tariff. No matter what the liability was, you could not roll into the tariff. The concern is there, and the attorneys have pretty much been silent on if you partnered with TransCanada, would the liability attach to the partnership? And there was a an exchange during the testimony when the representative, Mr. Massey from ExxonMobil, testified, and he was sitting there, and I asked Mr. Palmer if he would indemnify us right then and there on the spot, and he, of course, I mean, the smart guy that he is, declined to indemnify the state. But the conversation continued. ExxonMobil has testified that they will want to buy FT, or they'll buy a piece of the pipe commensurate with their FT. And TransCanada, in their proposal, has also said that they'd be willing to sell a part of the pipe for to the shippers. And the fear that I've got without the indemnification is twofold. If the state partners, if we take FT and we take the gas in kind ourselves, if we became a partner and own a small piece of the pipe and we're shipping gas and marketing gas ourselves, does that liability exist? If we're taking gas in value, so Exxon has taken FT, they're shipping our gas for us, and the administration's testimony at the time was that is something that will be negotiated at the time. And with all due respect to Mr. Massey and Mr. Palmer, if they're going to negotiate terms of a commercial deal between the two of them that affect my 12.5% of the gas, I'm not going to end up real well off in that negotiation between the two of them on those commercial terms. So all amendment number 4 does is under all circumstances, the state's indemnified. TransCanada, if they have a problem with the $9 billion or the $16 billion or the withdrawn partners, it's their problem. They brought it to the table. If it's not an issue, the administration and TransCanada have both testified this is absolutely not a problem. So if it's not a problem, then indemnify us. And by the time, what this says is the reimbursements cannot start to TransCanada from the state until we're indemnified. This gives plenty of times for the attorneys for TransCanada to work something up and indemnify the state of Alaska, whether you take your gas in kind or you take your gas in value, whether somebody else partners. I don't know the myriad of commercial arrangements that could potentially put us on the hook. Now, as a businessman, I would think that at the end of the day, TransCanada is going to cut a deal with these withdrawn partners and pay them off, and maybe it's 2 cents on the dollar, and maybe it's 20 cents on the dollar. I don't know. I don't care. I don't want to know. I don't want any part of it. And this indemnifies the state from any liability whatsoever, and that's the gist of amendment number 4.
Representative Fairclough, do you have...
Mr. Chairman, it's 2.5 pages, and we're just getting to the amendment. I'm wondering if we can take a brief at ease to make sure everyone's actually read the entirety of the amendment.
Any objection to that? Okay. We'll take a brief at ease while people get a chance to familiarize yourself with this particular amendment. Okay. We've had time to look through amendment number 4, and we've had a little buzzing around the table here, and it looks like what we'd like to do is go ahead and ask Mr. Palmer to come to the table, and Representative Samuels has an amendment to his amendments for his own benefit. Give Representative Samuels the floor.
Mr. Chairman, at the request of the drafter, Mr. Bullock, on page 2, line 13, on sentence E there, other effects on revenue to the state identified by the commissioner, and then add the words of revenue, just to clarify.
Add what word?
Of revenue, the commissioner of revenue. And I would move the amendment to the amendment.
Any objection? Without that objection, Representative Samuels, let it be known you have received an amendment in the committee today so far.
An amendment to the amendment.
An amendment to the amendment, yeah. Chairman, I ask Mr. Palmer to come up here and explain something, and it was doing it off the record, and I think a number of people wanted him to make that explanation on the record, so it was in
sure,
this open and transparent environment that we live in, so that everything is out in the open. The question, Mr. Chairman, was about the situation of how either TransCanada or TransCanada former company or however it ended up being and got into this liability situation and the effects it could or could not have on this pipeline and all that. And I, Mr. Palmer, maybe can go through the litany on that.
Sure. And just to let people know, this particular amendment requires indemnification to the state against loss of revenue by withdrawn partners from a company that Mr. Palmer has been associated with, and we'll have him explain that. And it the requirement in this amendment says no reimbursable expenses are put until that indemnification comes forward. Am I characterizing that correctly?
Yes.
Mr. Palmer, you were asked to come forward to talk about I don't know that you have to answer whether you will actually indemnify us, but at least you have explained this issue to us in a couple of forums, and Representative Harris has asked for you to come before us again. You may get a question or two, so Mr. Palmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be brief and summarize, because I think a number of the members have heard this a few times, but let me try to go over a bit of the history as to how this contingent liability came about to a an entity that TransCanada subsidiaries are a party to. 30 years ago, there was a company with an acronym called ANNGTC that put forward the original project for the Alaska section of the project. It had primarily U.S. pipeline companies, and TransCanada joined that partnership in 1980. That partnership spent some $250 million at the time doing good and valuable work, environmental, engineering, regulatory, and other work to advance the project when the project looked like it was going to proceed. However, the project did not go forward, as everyone knows, in the early 1980s, and those original partners all have withdrawn, commencing in the early 1980s, and the last party that withdrew was in 1994, and the only remaining partners in that entity are two TransCanada subsidiaries. Those two TransCanada subsidiaries are not the entities that have filed under AGIA, nor do they have any direct relationship with those parties. So when that original partnership was struck in 1978, any party that withdrew from that partnership lost all rights as a partner. There was no non-compete provisions in that partnership agreement, and at the request of the administration, we have filed that partnership agreement and all this information directly with the state, and it's on the state's website. Those partners did receive one single right, and that single right has to do with, in the event that the project was to be completed by that partnership, by ANNGTC, secondly, put into service by ANNGTC, and thirdly, ANNGTC could pay the original costs plus interest without undue hardship to that partnership, then those original withdrawn partners would have the right to reimbursement. So those are the three triggers. Last year, when the AGIA process came forward, those AGIA partners, the remaining partners, two TransCanada entities, decided that they could not viably put forward a competitive proposal under AGIA. And they decided that for a couple of reasons. One, it does hold some assets, the original engineering, the original right-of-way and other regulatory assets it holds, and some geotechnical work, but those assets clearly are nowhere near equal to that contingent liability if they were to bring the project into service, because that contingent liability, if you were to apply 14% interest rate, which was the rate at the time, although that has never been resolved as to what that specific interest rate would be, you get a very large number, as I recall, something in the order of $8 billion a year or two ago. So that partnership decided it could not competitively bid under AGIA, and in fact decided it could not viably advance the project. and decided at the time it would not do so. And in fact, this summer, TransCanada is taking action to dissolve that partnership. And in fact, LBNA wrote a letter to each of those withdrawn partners notifying them that TransCanada had made an application with different subsidiaries under AGEA. So, last fall, TransCanada decided that it, through separate entities, separate legal entities, would make an application under AGEA. It did so under TC Alaska Company LLC and Foothills Pipelines. They have nothing to do with those original entities from 30 years ago. They did not use any of the assets created by that original entity, and they will not use any of those assets going forward. So TransCanada, and TransCanada also made the commitment pursuant to its AGEA application that it would not seek ever to include in its rates, in its tolls and tariffs to its customers, it would not seek to recover any liability that ever comes home to TransCanada as a result of those withdrawn partner liabilities. That tells you how confident we are as a company that those obligations will not come home to us.
Representative Johnson, you have something to bring up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what I just heard is you have no trouble with indemnifying the state. You have no trouble, you're very confident. So you, is that, can I translate that into that you would support this amendment?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I did not say that we would provide an indemnity to the state or to any other party. I said that TransCanada is confident that this obligation does not exist. It's a contingent liability to former partners of an entity that we're in the process of dissolving. But that's a very different thing than TransCanada saying to you that we're going to provide you with a blanket indemnity for anything that could happen ever on this, not knowing what roles the state is going to have. The state has not, to my knowledge, ever indicated that they intend to be a partner of TransCanada by taking equity. And I've indicated that as a sovereign royalty collector, that we will not seek to recover any monies from you or from any other customer on this pipeline.
Mr. Chairman?
Anna Faircloth, Anna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say for the record and for Alaskans that you certainly, through the course of the last 30 days, have convinced me that there, if there was a liability out there, it was very limited. But that said, I will be a yes vote on this amendment because I think that there isn't an issue, that TransCanada has control of two subsidiaries, and we should be able to be indemnified of such a large cloud that seems to be hanging over other people's head. But this legislator has been convinced that that's a remote possibility that any of those fees could be rolled in.
Representative Samuels?
Chairman, I would agree with the Representative Faircloth. I don't think this is a big problem, but there's a lot of zeros. There's a lot of zeros, and I can guarantee there's a group of very sharp attorneys, just like these guys sitting in the back here, that when they start to see that many zeros, they're going to see a way to try to get to the deep pockets. And if we take FT, if we take a small percentage ownership, the deepest pockets in the room are sitting at the table right here. So I don't see the problem with you indemnify us because we don't, you're right, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't have a clue. Maybe we partner, maybe we don't, maybe we take the gas in kind, maybe we take the gas in value. I can't imagine why, sitting here today, why we wouldn't say, just indemnify us, and then the issue is gone for us. That is between you and the rest of your shippers then. That is between you and Exxon and Anadarko and Shell and all the rest of them. It's no longer our issue. You know, cut the best deal you can. If you have to pay them off out of your money or out of their money, whatever it is you do is fine with us, but it's not our problem. And we could not, as far as the folks that say we're just never going to amend the bill, there's no way that we could have addressed this issue until right now. This issue was did not come up until we knew that TransCanada was moving forward as the potential licensee.
Very good point. Representative Curtula.
Well, it may be that if we wanted to do it in amendment form, but we've heard the testimony for the last 6 weeks that this is not going to be rolled into the tariff, which is really the major way we'd have a problem. I mean, there is absolutely no way. Now, there are ways to roll costs into tariffs, and I've watched that for a long time, but when it's to do with a lawsuit, it would be so public that it would, you know, we would see it. It wouldn't be something that was much less obvious. So I feel very protected by the fact that there's absolutely no way you'd miss something like this going into a tariff, and that's really the way that we face the greatest problem. Plus, I have watched Mr. Palmer, listened to Mr. Palmer, listened to our own experts, and feel quite confident that at this point, with this step on the license we're granting for what we're doing, we're very protected. If there's other things that come up later, if there's something that we take a next step on in the negotiation, then we can deal with it. But at this point, I think we're covered. We're covered certainly through the tariff.
Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I respect the words that were just spoken, but I would beg to differ and cast a light a little bit differently. All of the representatives spoke very carefully about rolling in the potential contingent liability. Mr. Palmer cannot guarantee what the NEB does. As an example, we spoke about road maintenance on the Alaska Highway, and certainly the FERC would not allow that being rolled in, but we did hear from a representative that had previously served on NEB if there was a relationship between a construction cost, and this is on a road, this is on a different issue, but maintenance, that it could be that NEB would consider that for rolling into the tariff. And Mr. Palmer is a professional that has been a wonderful business representative for his company, and been very forthright in trying to present his opinion of what can happen. But he cannot guarantee what the Canadian government will do with tariffs. It will be an issue if it's brought forward. And again, I restate that I believe personally that it is a very small issue. TransCanada has a good relationships, I would assume, with their subsidiaries, and it should be a non-issue. So I can't just dismiss it when there's a potential for such a large disagreement with another sovereign nation. And I have been assured, at least I thought I was assured this morning in a meeting with TransCanada, that they agreed that this was a non-issue. Not this amendment, but the contingent liability was a non-issue that they were working on resolving. And as we try to hold everyone's feet to the fire in staying competitive, this holds TransCanada's feet to the fire, TransCanada Alaska, to make sure that we don't, that we're held harmless as a state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Palmer.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just clarify. The contingent liability has nothing to do with the Canadian section of the project. It solely has to do with the Alaska section of the project. That partnership that I described earlier was seeking to develop the Alaskan section of the project. So there would be no issue for the National Energy Board. There would be no issue for the Canadian government. In the event that TransCanada ever sought to apply it to its rates, which we have assured you we will not, and I think you've seen opinions from experts that say FERC would never allow that in the rates. This, I just wanted to clarify for the record, this has nothing to do with the Canadian section of the project.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Palmer, you've been very, you know, upfront with this all along about what this is about. You know, there was comment that we never could address this issue before. But Mr. Palmer and TransCanada has been in this building for years. If we had known that they were, or thought that they were going to be bidding on this project, and knew that this liability was above them, we could have addressed that then. But I'm concerned that if we make TransCanada indemnify the state, then TransCanada becomes the object. And if the point is to delay the project, then I think there's entities out there that would love to put financial pressure on the company that would cause delay. And that's something that, you know, I think everybody in this building has talked about, delays being a problem. So for that, I'm going to be voting no on this amendment.
Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate how you run a meeting and that we don't allow anyone to presuppose somebody's intention. And so I take offense to the last remark. I have been trying to listen very diligently to each amendment and have voted what I thought was best for Alaska. And I think that it's best for Alaska that if it's not an issue, if TransCanada can in fact just dissolve the issue for Alaska, then that's what should be done. But I am not trying to derail a project nor delay anything, and I am getting tired of people saying that someone who opposes or is for a particular issue, that that remark gets laid at their feet. And so I just like for the record that I'm not trying to delay anything. That's why I am here this morning.
Mr. Chairman.
One rebuttal and then yes, that's enough of that discussion because it's appropriate. But
I was not talking about anybody at this table. It had nothing to do with the motives or anyone at this table.
Chairman, I think there'll be plenty of delays in the process as we go forward that we won't even probably cause. So,
Sure, Mr. Speaker. The issue is one of whether or not we require an indemnification for reimbursement and that indemnification then becomes a broader topic of discussion than just the withdrawn partners. And so you create another layer of probably litigation possibility. And so, therefore, I will probably not support the amendment because it creates a kind of a litigation ladder when especially we're talking about mostly withdrawn partners. And at this point, it looks to me like the wholly owned subsidiary members of TransCanada are under the control of that same board. So the indemnification issue is almost in counterbalance to that. I understand about protecting Alaska, and my majority leader is about ready to probably silence me on that. But it seems to me like they're really kind of two different issues. And so, Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll be very brief. I think you're eliminating the litigation problem. You're not eliminating it for TransCanada and whoever the shippers may be, Exxon, Conoco, BP, Anadarko, Shell. That is a commercial deal between them and between TransCanada and the shippers, and if they partner and if they don't partner. But all you're going to do is say you're not coming after the state. You're going to eliminate all these lawyers that's looking at all those zeros, and you're saying, okay, they're off the table. They're indemnified. How deep are the other pockets that I can potentially go after? So I think, with all due respect to the comment that you're inviting litigation, I think you're eliminating some to the state. TransCanada and the shippers, they'll cut a deal, and that'll be the way it goes, but we won't have to worry about cutting the deal because we will be covered with Amendment Number 4.
I was asked by Commissioner Galvin if he could come forward, so I have been reluctant to let people come forward, but in this particular issue, we are going to be talking about that particular commissioner now that we've amended him in, and so reluctantly, I'm going to probably let him come forward in a moment. Representative Kirchhoff.
As he's coming up, may I make one point that I just asked Mr. Bullock, and we could call him up if you'd like. I mean, I've been struggling to try to figure out how the state could actually wind up in the problem. In the tariff, obviously, it can't be, but it would be a new partner, and the liability won't extend to a new partner. I mean, unless I'm misunderstanding something here. So, I just would like to make that point on the record. This just really seems to be a stretching of a point. It's a good point. It's something good to consider.
I think the question that the sponsor of the amendment would say, if there's no problem, what's the problem? And I think that's what we need to get to. Mr. Galvin, before we do that, Representative Samuel.
$16 billion is the number that will be floated around, and I guarantee there's going to be 9 lawyers somewhere. They're going to look at a way to get 50,000, 50 million, 500 million, something. With that many zeros after it, this issue is not going to disappear. There's too much money at stake. You partner, and then they come after you, and they'll use delay. I mean, you don't know what will happen. They're not going to roll into the tariff, but they can certainly drag it out and drag it out and drag it out and drag it out until you cut a deal and pay them off. And that's fine if that's what TransCanada wants to do. TransCanada can cut a deal and pay them off, and they'll be gone. I just don't want us included in the deal.
Follow-up comment before we go to the...
No matter how much... Thanks, Mr. Chair, and then I'll quit. No matter how much is at stake, and we know people will sue the state every day, I mean, but no matter how much is at stake, the principles of the law are going to remain the same. If they tried to put this into the tariff, we would know about it. There are other things that go into tariffs where we can't track it. This is absolutely trackable, so that's off the table. The second way is, in terms of the partnership liability, I just can't figure out how it would happen, but I'll turn it over to the commissioner.
All right. We have before us the commissioner, Mr. Galvin. I am not going to say welcome to our committee, but you may put yourself on the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Pat Galvin, Commissioner of Department of Revenue, and I appreciate, I'm not here to speak to the amendment as a whole. I just, as the person that is going to be responsible for implementing this for the most part, I just wanted to comment on some concerns I have with regard to my ability to implement it if it is to pass. This is the first time I've seen it, so I'm just reading through it the first time and trying to anticipate how this would actually play out, and I have some concerns about that. The first one is just going to the nature of the exercise that I'd be asked to fulfill, which is to identify the potential liability that the licensee may have to withdrawn partners. And within the structure of this amendment, it sort of goes back and forth between whether the liability is strictly related to effects on revenue to the state or if it goes to just general liability that the licensee may have that would come out of the licensee's pocket. I think the purpose of it is to provide an indemnification that goes to potential impacts on the state, but that it kind of goes back and forth between those. And in particular, just turning to the section, subsection B4, which is on page 2, beginning on line 3, that this is, again, the Commissioner of Revenue shall determine the effect on revenue to the state should the licensee be found liable to a partner, and then skipping on down, the effect of revenue to the state includes costs associated with delays. So I assume that is something to do with time value money, and assuming that there's a discount factor built into that, effect on the tariff, fairly straightforward, effect on state's taxes and royalties tied to the tariff, I assume. The effect on a person acquiring an ownership interest in the project. Now, that one eludes me in terms of how that relates to the state revenue if it's associated with the relationship between the licensee and some other potential person acquiring an ownership interest, and then other effects on revenue. So given that we're going to have to go through this determination process before we can reimburse the licensee, it may be a matter that becomes fairly unclear in terms of the actual implementation, and I think that in everybody's interest, even those who oppose this, I think we need to have as clear a mandate in terms of what is expected of us going in, so that I don't end up bringing back a report that is called into question because I didn't do what supposedly somebody wanted. So I think that at a minimum we need to clear up what exactly is being requested, and then from that, what is the ultimate purpose of the indemnification? If it's to make sure that we're not going to be impacted about expected future revenues, if it's about liabilities that are not necessarily revenue related but liability related, an expenditure that comes up, that needs to be cleared up in terms of what actually is the purpose of the report. The second part goes to the ability to actually identify that at the time that we're referring to, which is going to be fairly soon. There are going to be expenditures in the next quarter to half a year that are going to be requested to be reimbursed, and in the context of coming up with this this report, things such as on page 1, line 15, where it says natural gas in kind or in value. The sponsor of the amendment referenced if the state were to take FT commitments, that might change the potential liability issues. If the state were to take some sort of equity position at some point, that might change. We're not going to be at a point in a few months to make a determination as to whether or not the state's going to be in either one of those positions, and so it's going to be very difficult to make any sort of a report as to what the potential exposure is, because it's going to be based upon decisions the state has not made yet in terms of the participation in this project. And so that
exposure is going to be basically something the state's going to have to decide whether to accept at some point in time when the offer is put before us. If it's limited to simply what it seems to state at the beginning, effects on revenue to the state, which would be tied to tariff, which would be tied to netback value, are both the reports that came back to us from our legal consultants, the indication, the comments that came in from the critics of this, particularly the producers, have all acknowledged that it's not going to show up in the tariff. And frankly, TransCanada has already indemnified us for that because they have stated in their application they will not seek to have any of these liabilities put into the tariff. So if they do, they will be in breach of the license and they have to indemnify us for any damages to us. So as it relates to the tariff, we're already covered. It's already in the nature of the relationship that we have established with the licensee. If we're going beyond that, then we're going to have a bit more guidance in terms of what we're supposed to be looking at, because it's going to be basically speculation about if the state were to choose to take this role in the future, then we may have this potential liability based upon the analysis that we may do. And we're going to need a little bit more guidance in terms of how far into that speculative world we're going to have to go, because frankly there's nothing that we're authorized to do in terms of taking on that kind of liability at this point in time unilaterally. It's going to have to be something that the legislature would have to participate in.
Representative Faircloth, you had a question or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Galvin, what I heard TransCanada tell us is they will not seek damages. Is that what you heard?
They've stated in their application that they will not put any potential payments under this liability into the tariff.
Right. They will seek.
But secondly, our FERC analysis has indicated FERC would not allow that even if they did seek it. So we've kind of covered on either end.
Right. But FERC gave us no firm conclusions on any of that. They said when the application rolled forward, they said they had never done that before. I heard during the last 6 weeks that they wouldn't seek damages, but what they could not control was a court award. And that was the whole issue that we were trying to get to, as I understood it in the amendment that's going forward. Attorneys, if they're successful in saying that there is a liability that's extended, that the attorneys or a court could award that to be rolled into the state. And I'll let you respond in just a second. I just was flipping through the treble damages, and the state was very able to produce a cumulative state exposure of $874 million, but when pressed with that was based on TransCanada's proposal, but when pressed up in MATSU, I asked about the difference between the TransCanada application of costs to get to open season and others that are proposing pipelines that aren't before us, then the potential liability on treble damages came up to $2 billion. So I understand that this might be an issue, but there's a big range that you've worked with before in trying to ascertain risk and a range of risk for Alaska. So if you could comment.
Yeah, sure. I guess on the first one, it wasn't a question that was put to FERC. It was a question as to whether or not our FERC experts had identified anything within the FERC authority that would allow them to put that liability into the tariff. And they found that FERC didn't, that wasn't something that was within the costs that FERC would transfer into a tariff. It's not part of the group of costs that can be requested to be reimbursed through a tariff process. It's not a question of, you know, whether FERC may or may not, because it's not a discretionary act. And so the issue is sort of twofold, that TransCanada has said that they won't, which is fine for what it's worth, but that also provides us with the cover that if it gets in there, then we get reimbursed. Secondly, FERC doesn't have the authority to do it. Now, the second part in terms of a potential range, the issue there is we could basically we would be put in a position if we said, what does the state have the authority to do in terms of our relationship with the licensee and what kind of exposure does it provide us? The answer would be extremely limited, if not down to nothing, because the tariff side is covered. If we were then to interpret this to say, well, imagine every potential role the state could have up to and including the state actually buying out TransCanada and taking over the whole thing, that brings us out to a whole another world. But that would engender us speculating on the legislature agreeing to take on a role that you would presume, as was discussed in the hearing when the issue actually came up, as Representative Samuels indicated, it's at the time that you decide to enter into an equity relationship that you would deal with a liability or an indemnification issue. We're not entering into that kind of relationship through this license. And so we don't know what the exposure is at this time because we're not engaged in that level of a negotiation in terms of having that kind of a relationship.
Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, does the administration believe the exposure is small?
We believe that the exposure, given the current relationship that would be established under AGIA, is small. However, my point isn't related to that. My point is that the report that I would be asked to provide does not provide me enough guidance to know what the answer I'm supposed to give.
If I might follow up,
Representative Faircloth.
I've heard your concern, and I've heard TransCanada say that it's a non-issue and that they were currently in a process to remove the issue from all concerns. And so I guess I would ask for your comment on that. I have heard this administration say that voting yes on this project will not derail competition of two pipelines going forward, and that voting yes on AGIA holds specifically the producers or the potential shippers' feet to the fire to commit their gas. Is that a true statement?
I would say that it puts the question of duty to develop on a track to be basically resolved. I wouldn't say that it puts their feet in the fire to commit their gas to the TransCanada project.
Last point, Mr. Chairman. Then I just want the administration to know that I'm giving TransCanada, in a yes vote for this amendment, their marching orders for a duty to perform. They have told me it wasn't an issue. I believe the cost numbers are somewhere around $200 million at a 14% accumulative rate every year if it were to be exercised. Comes up with the figure that Representative Samuels is quoting in the billions of dollars. And so if it's a non-issue, it's a non-issue. They are in the process. I hope that they have it done this summer and that you would never have to prepare a report because they would submit that those subsidiaries have relinquished their claims. I think it holds their feet to the fire, too.
And Representative Faircloth, I appreciate that's the purpose of your yes vote. My stated concern is that although it is seen as a non-issue, by conditioning reimbursement on us putting together this report that is not very well defined, it actually makes an issue of it in terms of being able to advance the project, and that you're actually creating, for the purposes of clarifying this issue, an area that has a lack of clarity that ends up dragging the process down. That's my stated concern. I'm not trying to get into, you know, just clean that up if that's your desire, but it doesn't get you there right now.
Representative Harris.
Okay, Mr. Commissioner, thank you very much. So you don't like the way that this amendment is written, and you don't believe that it's clear in what your duties are supposed to be under this. How do you propose, or do you think there is an issue, how do you propose that the state be indemnified from the issue that TransCanada faces, small or otherwise, but How does the state be protected? I mean, it's pretty well been documented or said that it's not going to be in the tariff. We're not going to have to worry about the tariff. But are there other issues? You're an attorney. I'm not. So you understand the law a little bit better than I do, probably, or at least the way lawyers work. And so what do you propose that the state do to protect itself from the issues that have been brought forward?
And it's just, yeah.
I have been reminded even by my staff that the chairman is supposed to be in control of the committee, so you have to go through the chair.
Through the chair, Mr. Speaker.
Supposed to be
through the chair, Mr. Speaker.
I believe that under the AGIA license, the relationship that will be established will protect the state as it relates to the potential liability of the withdrawn partner liability being in the tariff. I think it's small, if it exists at all. I don't think I personally don't think it exists at all, but to the extent that even if it's found, I believe we're protected through the license. As it relates to the potential liability that may come to the state if we decide to change our relationship with TransCanada to take on either a role as an FT shipper or as a partner, we will have the ability at that time to engage in the necessary discussions about indemnification based upon a knowledge of the relationship that we're trying to establish and the risk of exposure that that relationship would create. At this particular point in time, the type of relationship that we may decide to enter into with TransCanada at some point in the future or with whoever the licensee, you know, may turn out to be, is so wide and diverse that the need for indemnification and the type of indemnification is not something that would be something that we could pin down. But at the time that we decide to enter into that, we will have every opportunity to protect ourselves before entering into that relationship. And so from my vantage point, the amendment is not necessary because we're protected in our relationship as it exists, and we'll have every opportunity to protect ourselves before entering into a different relationship in the future.
Thanks.
Wrap up.
Doing it later is not good enough. I want to do it now. Thanks.
Okay, any further discussion? Everybody satisfied? They have enough information to make a vote? Call the question.
Representative Gutenberg,
no.
Amendment 4 is amended.
No.
Representative Harris?
No.
Representative Faircloth?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Samuels?
Yes.
Representative Curtula?
No.
Representative Coghill?
No.
3 yes, 4 no. Amendment 4 is amended.
Oh, the pain of being a chairman.
You can't even pass.
That brings the A.8 before us.
I'll offer it on the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask Commissioner Galvin to provide for us prior to reaching the floor specifically where in AGIA he believes we're protected, what language inside of the AGIA contract protects the state?
Yes, let's make that specific. It's not only within the license but within the application process. I think Representative Faircloth, you got that, Mr. Galvin. And this is one of the harder things that we have to do in making these discussions. So I want to let my majority leader know that as much as I struggle with this thing,
and struggle enough.
Is there any further discussion on this particular bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move from committee House Bill 3001 with whatever version it was, with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes, if there are any.
Any objection to moving the bill from committee? All right, without any objection, we will move this House Bill 3001 from committee with individual recommendations. We are adjourned.